So Matt, we stirred up a whole bunch of drama with the spinners that we put together for the April Fool's joke, and I know that's kind of brings it back to the times that you come from. If I remember correctly, you came up in the early 2000s car scene.
So for me, it was actually, and I know I'm dating myself, this it was actually the 90s, so like early to mid 90s is kind of when I got started, probably before the spinner thing took off. When that came about, it was like a whole new thing, because it brought in a bunch of I don't want to say fake car people, but people that were not really into cars, but they wanted that look. Maybe some of those turned into car people. I don't know. But I do distinctly remember that being a big thing, kind of taking over the world. Yeah, I remember that.
So would it be more appropriate to say you were kind of around when those cars were taking that transformation from the street scene and kind of being adopted more into, I guess you would say, the car show culture, like where you would see it in like the Super Street magazines when we were younger and things like that, where you had like these, I guess the UK guys and all of them call them sex spec cars, where they're like, you know, really crazy show cars with like different, you know, different crazy over the top liveries and lighting options. Like,
well, I'll take you like on a little trip down memory lane, so to speak. So early on, like mid 90s, we'll say, a lot of the vehicles, most of the vehicles were not either a street car or a track car or a show car. They were all the above. So you had guys like Ron Bergenholtz, for example, who had this crazy Integra at the time, winning all the shows. He also drove it on the street, and then he also raced it. Like, he did all three, and that was like a very normal thing. Nowadays, not so much. But, you know, at that time, you know, people usually just had one car, and you went to school with that, or you went to work with that, and then you built it up, and you probably street raced on the weekends. You took it to shows. You did everything with it. Whereas nowadays, you usually have, like, you know, probably more than one car. I mean, most guys nowadays will have, like, a daily driver, maybe a track car, maybe a show car, maybe all three, yeah. You know? So it's definitely a different time. And a lot of the vehicles that were, like, in Super Street and Importuner and stuff, a lot of those vehicles were multi-purpose. And so you get a lot of cars in there that look a little bit rough when you saw them in person. Maybe, like, they may have cleaned it up for the photos, but they look a little bit rough. That's because they were used, you know, they were being used for multiple things, whether it be driving it every day, drag strip, whatever, you know?
So what were some of those? I mean, I'm thinking back, you know, some of the cooler trends that were going on back there. Like, I still to this day love underglow on cars. There's just something about that. It calls me back to that time period of like when I was that, you know, middle school age kid seeing these cars all for the first time. And I think that kind of stuck in our memory of, yeah, like, oh, you know, it's a tuner car, so it has to have the underglow and it has to be loud and make all the right sounds and shoot flames and that type of thing. And I feel like that underglow was a big part of it. And for me, I've always loved that. I loved the fact that you had the, I know I'm going to get flamed for this one, but Lamborghini doors. Being that I'm a 300ZX guy, I think that Lamborghini doors on certain vehicles still complete that cool over the top show car styling. Like, where kind of did you find yourself gravitating towards with some of those more popular things?
So I'm like a certified hater. So I did not like, I was not into the underglow thing. It was kind of cool seeing it come back though, like on the drift cars and stuff, especially when the events like took place, you know, in the evenings and stuff. I like that thing. I thought it was cool. I know it had like a big uprising in like the last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It's not my thing. But you know, I get it. It kind of went full circle. It's interesting to see it come back. With the Lambo door thing, and the Z, are you thinking like, and I'm just going to ask you this, I just want an honest answer here. Are you thinking that you're in your Z with the doors flipped up, some sort of loud rap music, you're an East Coast guy, so DMX, probably, whatever, your foot out the door and just cruising through cars and coffee? Is that like what's going on right now?
No.
Cool.
No. That would be really cool, but no, that's not my style.
No,
honestly, just kind of, I've always liked that kind of look. Like, it was definitely, I know it's a time period thing, but just something about with that car. Like, don't get me wrong, if you're putting it on, you know, your four-door Honda Civic, it's not the same. But when you put it on to a car that that kind of complements those body lines and has that feel already, it works with the vehicle. And that was always my thing. Like, if some of those more over the top exaggerated tuning add-ons from the past were still used but toned down or used in an appropriate way, I don't think it would be as severe. But I think one of the problems we ran into is, like, you would have, you know, a guy with Altezza taillights and crystal clear front headlights off of a, you know, Acura thrown onto their SRT4, let's say, or their Neon. Right. And it was this hodgepodge of things that didn't fit, that didn't flow with the body lines, that didn't make sense with the car. And I struggled with that. I think that was more of that's the aspect I didn't like from that time period, versus like now where we're seeing a lot more of that clean OE style, where it's like an OE plus is more of what we're looking for. So I like the balance that we saw.
Yeah. So I was fortunate enough to kind of see the transition just from just being involved with it for so long. So I distinctly remember what you're talking about, like the headlight and taillight conversions. I mean, I lived in San Diego and every car had super taillights. It doesn't matter what it was, like a CRX, a Civic Coupe, MR2s, everything had super taillight. That was like a big thing. I even had, when I was very young, I had a roommate that was building a CRX. I had a CRX also. And he had done Acura CL headlights.
Okay.
And then Prelude taillights. neither had any business being on the car, but that was like, he wanted something different, right? And so at that time, I think that was considered different, you know, choosing something that shouldn't fit and making it fit. But then, you know, as the 2000s rolled around, it seemed like the transition, at least for the Honda guys, went from all that crazy stuff to like a more OEM plus style, you know. So that obviously the GDM influence is huge.
Yeah.
So that made a difference. So you saw a lot more guys just doing like a simple OEM lip, maybe a wing, and that was it. You know, they kept it real simple, you know, body-wise, anyways.
Yes, so. It's kind of funny because for me, I was down in Maryland at the time, so we were a little bit further behind. I lived by MIR. Yeah. I remember going to Hot Import Nights there, Nobi Nationals there, and it was like the cars had like these obnoxious pedestal wings on them that weren't functional, just made out of fiberglass, and you know, the front splitter screwed directly into the bumper, you know, no support whatsoever. And, and you know, obnoxious body kits and, you know,
and the huge tow hook, right? The huge tow hook for no reason.
Oh yeah. The tow hook that was literally screwed into the fiberglass bumper. So that way when you pulled it, it just took everything off. That was, but it was crazy because like, I didn't know, like, obviously I was, 15 at the time when I went to this, you know, when I was going to these events when I was a kid, and it was the coolest thing ever. Like, I got to see the cars from Fast and Furious at the paddock and, you know, things like that. Like, I'm sitting there looking at, you know, the Evo and the Eclipse, which the Evo was a brand new car to us at the time. That was the first time we ever saw an Evo.
Right.
And actually, that's part of the reason why I think I ended up owning one, was because of that memory of seeing the car in person. And
sometimes like with when you're kind of new to the whole thing, you'll see some vehicle or maybe go for a ride in it, or maybe have a friend that has one or whatever. It's weird how much of an effect it has on you. And then that's kind of like your thing. That's what you're into for the next however many years. Maybe later on you'll transition to something else, but for you, it might've been the Evo. For me, my first like introduction to cars, or, you know, like modified cars, was a Honda Civic. So it stuck with me. Right. And that's the direction that I took, and I've always been, you know, a Honda nerd. But I think early on, you know, seeing these guys that were modifying, like, you know, these mundane people mover Civics was like it was just really cool to see this like very, very stock, very, very slow vehicle being turned into something that's like it turns heads, and at that time considered fast, right? Not by today's measures, obviously. I do remember my first vehicle cutting the springs. That was like a thing you did, right? Back then, like you I know it sounds terrible now, but at the time there weren't a ton of aftermarket brands that were available, like in the early 90s. There's, you know, there were some, but you typically would cut your springs. That's just what you did, you know.
And you would destroy the spring rate of the car. So you're bouncing all the way down the road, right?
Like today, like decades later, I'm probably still feeling the effects of that in my back. Like, I remember, you know, I had a CRX, that was my first like real build, you know, and I probably had it for a week, and then my buddy in his garage, we pulled the springs out, and I was like, how many should we cut? All of our friends and cut like around three and a half, or three and three, whatever number of springs. And I was like, no, I want it to be really low. I think we did like four, which is stupid, just crazy, right? And so, we hacked it off and put it back together, and then I just remember just, scraping down the road and, get the headlights,
Yep.
popping and all that
Oh
stuff.
yeah.
It was the worst thing you could possibly do to a car, but at the time, like, that was pretty standard. That's just what you did,
Well, there
and it
wasn't
would
any
be,
other options, right? I mean, that's really what
yeah,
the
I mean,
problem was.
there was, but I just bought a car. Like, I was like, 18, 19, I didn't have enough money to start buying, buying parts, but I had no patience. So, I definitely made that error. I admit that. And then it would be, a few years before I picked up a set of new speed springs and then put them in there. And I was like, wow, what a difference it makes. It really handles well now. The problem was the wheel gap was huge. So I was like, huh, it's a stiffer spring. So theoretically, if I hack off a coil or two, it should still be better than what I had before.
Oh,
And it probably
geez.
was, but it was still terrible, right? And then, I remember later on some companies coming out with, I think Skunk, well, Skunk Works at the time, came up with like those coilover sleeves where you just kind of put the sleeve on your shock and it's adjustable. Probably not the best thing, but at that time it was great.
I mean,
It was a
it's
huge
far
step
better
up.
than cutting them off. I mean, at the end of the
Yeah, for
day,
sure, for sure,
at
for
least
sure.
you're
Anybody
just missing a
watching, don't
preload.
do that. But back in that time, that was like what everyone did. It was really stupid, but it's how we kind of got started, And then I think once you did that, a lot of guys, at least at that time, we would take out the front bumper and then cut out the main grill opening, just completely hack it out, and then put like a mesh screen in there. And that mesh screen, I don't know why this is a thing, but that mesh screen just was like door screening, the screen door. Yeah,
Oh,
that's all
geez.
it was. You get it from Home Depot, you just trim it out to the right size and you make it fit in there. And that was like a huge trend. So that, and then a set of like Kia driving lights, and then you're
Okay,
good. Like you were the guy. You had your mesh screen, your Kias, and
then
then
your
your
cut
cut springs,
springs,
and
and
you
you
were
were
the
the guy
guy
for a
for a
little
little
while.
while.
So it's so funny because I'm thinking back, like I was at the time looking at like guys like AB Flug and Velsi doing like body kits, because I keep going back to the Z thing, but there was like those cars were something that I remember from my childhood, and those, over the top crazy, like there was just something about that time period, especially coming out of Japan. And then later, obviously, I got more into the Smoking Nagatas, the Liberty Walk guys, and a lot of their, I mean, even Liberty Walk's way over the top compared to, a standard body kit. But just some of the stuff was just really cool that was coming out at that time. I mean, I think one of the weird things that always struck me as odd, though, was that you would see, as you said, these multi-purpose cars, and they would have, they would still have like full audio in them. They would still have a key, and you're sitting there going, you're racing this at the track on the weekend, but then you have 400 pounds of fiberglass and stereo equipment in the back. And that was something I just never understood, how they could square that circle.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on, I think a lot of it comes down to region. Like maybe in your area, that's how it was. In California, when Battle of the Imports was like a huge thing. Like everyone went to Battle of the Imports. A lot of the Honda guys and even some of the non-Honda guys, they would pull out all the audio, all the rear interior, and then even the hatch, like on Integra, they pull the hatch off and just cover it with like a trash bag or plastic, and then tape the crap out of it so it wouldn't fly off as you're going down the track. The other thing was, they called it speed tape, and this is like really dating me, but speed tape was basically just duct tape, right? Everyone had it in their head that like the cracks or the gaps between the hood and the bumper, and then the fender and the hood, was robbing them of MPH, right? So they would end up taping that off. All that stuff would be taped off. So
Okay.
cars got real, real ugly because you'd have like a red car with blue tape, a plastic rear window, no interior,
That's crazy.
just all these crazy things that people were doing just to like try to eke out a little bit more mile per hour, or a little bit better time.
And just to
I don't,
put this in
I don't know how
perspective,
effective it
what was
was,
the
but
time?
yeah.
What were just to put it in perspective
So
for the people
this is like
listening?
a pretty crazy, this is a crazy time. This is when like they hit like a lot of the faster Honda guys hit 12s, and then right after they hit 11s, and like, oh crap, they're in the 10s now. Like it got really, really crazy at that time. I remember being at Battle of the Imports when Papadakis ran that first 10, and it was like, mind blowing. That place looked crazy, right? So this is way back then. You know, now you can do it a lot cleaner and a lot smoother as far as
building
building
a
a
car,
car,
but
but
back
back
then
then
it
that
just,
just,
you know,
makeshift,
makeshift.
just make it work, you know.
I
So
remember seeing some of those faster cars, especially in like the publications back in the day, like the Chevy, when they had the race Chevy Cobalt, and they had the Honda Insight. I think that was what Busy had, the Honda Insight
Yeah,
there for
Busy
a
had
while.
that one. I think the Chevy, I think Whitfield had a Chevy for a while.
Yeah,
Yeah.
some
Interesting.
really cool cars that were coming out, especially from the drag racing scene back then. I don't think it's talked about enough because, as I said, most of the time we focus on like more of the show cars and stuff. But the drag racing scene back then, it was a lot of innovation, a lot of technical know-how. These guys were, especially out of Papadakis, they were bringing, you know, unheard of things to the table, I feel like.
Yeah. It was certainly touch and go, right? Like, so it was a lot of experimentation that those guys are doing. They're definitely groundbreaking for that time. Some of that trickled down to the street. Most of it was like completely out of range. But yeah, just getting back to stuff that like that happened back then that didn't really make it, didn't really carry over. One of the things I hated was when I really got into like engine swaps and making cars faster was the chipped ECU thing. There were guys that had a laptop and they had access to whatever code writing they were using at the time, and they were writing these crazy programs like this is going to make it faster because it sets the VTEC later, the crossover later, and you get a higher red line and launch control, all these things. But at the time, the technology wasn't there. They were just guessing, so it was not good. It
Was
was
that when they
bad.
were still
It
burning
was
the chips and putting them into the socket on the board? Oh, I love those days.
This is before before Honda came in and took over. But like, man, I just remember those times, and like you're almost guaranteed to blow something up at that time.
Well, yeah, because it was all kind of, and not to mention you didn't have any feedback. Like the amount of feedback that you have in a modern ECU is what, 40 times more fidelity than what you
Of
had in one
course.
of those, if not more. So it's a big difference between the modern tuning game and what those guys were doing. I mean, they were kind of on the seat of their pants. They were tricking mass airflow sensors into reading different voltages. They were tricking everything. Like, you know, trying to change an injector table back then was literally rocket science, and these guys were the ones doing it. So.
I think other stuff that like came out of the 90s and I guess 2000s also that I liked, color match moldings was like a really big thing. It was a very controversial thing. Like with a lot of the lower model Hondas would come with black bumpers, black door handles, black
My
mirrors,
mom
and
had
then
a
the side.
DX. My mom had a DX, so I remember the black,
There's
you know,
like
black
more
bump
black
trims.
than paint, right? Yeah. So I remember early on, friends of friends were, color matching the whole car. Like everything that was black was being painted. And that was like it made a huge difference to me in terms of with the way the car looked. So that hit me pretty hard. And so I remember with my CRX, that was one of the things that I planned. When I got it, after I did it the first couple of months, eventually I was going to color match everything, and then I eventually did, and it completely changed the car. I like that style better, but I know nowadays a lot of guys like the black moldings, even black bumpers on some of them. They like that look.
Yeah.
I don't. I don't. I wish that had stuck around a little bit more, but.
There is something very nice about like the cleaner, higher, especially when you get into like the SI trim and all that, where everything is paint matched and everything kind of has that same feel. When you look at the base models, it kind of, or the DX, you know, whatever you want to call them, the lower trims, you can kind of just feel that they've taken some compromises to bring the cost down. And at the time, that's what it was about. They weren't really looking to sell that car as their nicer vehicle.
Yeah, now they all look the same because everything's
Yeah.
just one color, right? Like, they're
Yep.
all the same unless you have a Type R, you have the wing or whatever, and the more aggressive fenders. But for the most part, if you see them down the road, they're all the same. You can't really tell a low model from a higher model. They're all the same.
I mean, to be fair though, that on the bottom of the Civics, that black lip kind of became popular. I mean, it was really funny that it was, at first people were paint matching them, and then it turned around and people were like, "Oh no, I got to have the black trim at the bottom."
Yeah, it's basically whatever was JDM, that was what people kind of gravitated toward. And I think early on, as far as trends went, we were looking toward Japan like always, right? But there before the internet and before you had the option to do that, and before magazines were really traveling over there, it was the actual Japanese books like Option and stuff like that. We would find that like at the Japanese markets in California. You just kind of go there and flip through those books. They were expensive. They were like $10, which it was a lot back then for these, they call them the Bibles back then. But every once in a while somebody would actually buy one, and we just spent so many hours going through it, just looking to see what was, what was going on, what was hot.
I saw all those option things well after that. So mm-hmm. I saw them once they kind of trickled into the American market and kind of got exposure. Yeah. So it's really funny that you say that, because I would say I was probably looking at the same publication, 10 years after you were looking at it. I would say by the time you made it over to the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I think the one I'm referring to was HyperRev, which they would take a vehicle and they would just focus on that vehicle. So like the EK9, for example, it would be a whole issue. Dedicated, it was pretty thick too, and there was just like all types of wheels available for it, engine mods, they do like small features, and of course you couldn't read it, it was all in Japanese, but I just pulled up the photos and see what was out there. That's awesome. See what was going on.
That's something I missed out on now that I know that existed.
But you can just go online and do it that way. It's a lot easier now. But back then, that was kind of a cool thing, because it was like the hunt, you're trying to hunt for, maybe trying to find a part that nobody else had. You find it in this book and figure out some way to import it. That was kind of a cool thing,
Wow.
Earlier you mentioned Altair's taillights. What if that comes back? Are you into that?
No, I'm not into those at all. That was actually one of the things that killed me about that time period. I absolutely can't. Like, there's just something nice about a good OE style light, or like, even if they do a little bit, like if you're shaving like some of the markings where they do like a clearer lens or something like that. But I like having the nice ambers, something about like, even on my Z, I know a lot of guys change over to the newer 99 spec tail light, and that gets rid of the amber turn signal.
Right.
And
right.
I'm just like, I can't do it. Like, I want to keep the amber. I like the red, it's just something about that lighting combination I do like. I never like seeing the chrome on the back of the cars, especially when it's like a contrasting color. When you have like a really nice red car and then you have this obnoxiously bright chrome taillight, it killed it every time for me.
Yeah, those taillights, that was like that whole time period, I hated those. I hated that look. And I remember whenever I see those cars at the mall, they'd always have water inside the lens because they were always leaking. And I was like, man, how can you have that in your car? But that was like, that's what people did. It was a very inexpensive, simple upgrade you could buy anywhere, right? APC was everywhere.
Yeah.
So those.
Oh my gosh, then, APC.
Yeah, oh my APC. Gosh. So
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So the I don't know if it was their headquarters or their factory or whatever. It was on a main freeway here called the 15, and like we would drive past it all the time when we go to IBOC. For meets and stuff, and we'd always see that huge building with a huge sign, and then eventually it kind of went down. But when those were real big, and also the clear taillights where everything's clear, and that was a huge thing. And I hated all of it.
I
know a lot of people are gonna be upset. I know people are gonna be upset because they like that style. I just, something about it looks cheap to me.
I would agree with you. That was one of the things. I mean, some of the D-Max lights that were coming in later for like the drift mm-hmm. cars, for like the S14, I like their solid red, full taillight assembly. Some of those ones are kind of cool, but they all suffer from the same thing, which was seal failure. The minute they got away from using like OE quality plastic and OE, over time, the heat from the sun would just warp everything. It would just, nothing would stay sealed, and you'd have fish tanks in the...
Yeah, remember like those... Those Altezza style lights were like on everything, like Ford F-150. They were on everything. They made them for every vehicle, it seemed like.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they got rich off those things. They were,
everywhere. So APC reminds me, how about hot air intakes? They were notorious for the AutoZone advanced auto part intake. And now that I'm thinking about it, everyone that I know when I was younger was like, the first thing they did when they got their car, they'd run out. They'd go get a piece of bent piping with this, cheap air filter and one coupler. They'd cap off their PCV valve so that it was just like a little filter on there, or they just run it open. I mean, that goes back to what you guys were dealing with, where there was no, was there ever a time where you guys were like, all right, I'm going to build this out of PVC at this point? Because
had nothing. For sure. Not because there wasn't options. There were options available. Like, I remember like Akimoto was one. There was a few different brands, but more because people were just cheap. We didn't have a lot of money. Like, we're all young. We had like crappy jobs and we weren't making very much money. We're, paying for our car insurance or whatever. So you just kind of made do with what you could, right? So typically, they called them flip boxes. The intake, you would take off the bottom of the box and then it would make it louder, right? Because you get rid of the resonator. So that was what people would do first. And then, they do some sort of a PVC contraption with a crappy filter at the end. And you know, I don't miss that in terms of how crappy it was, but I do kind of miss the fact that people were like very DIY. They were just kind of figuring out on their own. Maybe they heard from a friend how to do it, or they just get down there and start, you know, getting dirty and kind of figure out how to make things work. There was definitely a time where shops were flourishing, like in the 90s, because you wanted an engine swap or something, mm-hmm. go to the local shop and have them do it. You drop off your car Monday, maybe by like Sunday, you can go grab it and it's done. You know what wow. I mean? Later on though, people were like, you know, I can just do this myself. Like I've seen people doing it before, or my friend did it, and they would just spend maybe like 2 weeks with their car in the garage and they're just, you know, figuring it out. And that was like a really, really interesting time because people were taking stuff on very DIY. It was bad for the shops because they started losing a lot of business because people were like, why am I going to go spend all this money on labor when I can just do it myself and figure it out? So that became like a real turning point as we entered the 2000s and people were just doing it on their own.
I mean, that's what got me into cars. I mean, I started wrenching on my friend's cars, hanging out at the shop with them. Like we had like a local shop that we'd all go hang out and congregate at. And then it turned into working on the cars at the weekend at the house and just buying the parts at the shop versus paying them to do the job, because they're like, well, we have tools, we're mechanically inclined, let's go out there and wrench. You know, only way we're going to learn is by doing. And in all fairness, a lot of these guys were just as talented as some of the guys in the shop because they weren't exposed to a lot of this for a long period of time either. So everyone was kind of learning as they were going anyway.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, I don't know if we'll get to the same feel of like people just getting a car and then just building it themselves if they've never done it before, because it's very overwhelming if you're not mechanically inclined, if you've never actually wrenched on something, you buy some used car and you're like, damn, should I fix this first, fix that first, start modifying it. There's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of avenues you can take, right? We saw recently with Tech Joyce, is someone we worked with recently. We got a set of wheels for her. She's brand new to like modifying cars, right? And so she's just getting started and she's doing, you know, like the very basic stuff, but she's taking it on herself, which is cool. It's cool to see. I think a lot of younger people are like, I'm not touching that thing. Like, I don't even want to deal with it. I'll find a shop to do it. Maybe not back then as much because people couldn't afford it, but nowadays it seems like they can. You know, it's a little bit different.
I think there's also a different desire. Like, I think for us, you know, as I said, there was an itch. There was something about like getting out there and doing it. It was more than just the end product. And sometimes I feel like that's something that's missing with the current car generation, is that they want that instant gratification of the fast car, the best performing car, because they see that they can go out and drop, you know, $80,000 and walk away with something that checks every box for them. But we didn't have that possibility. You know, you didn't have that kind of money. No one was going to finance you that type of money. And on top of that, the cars weren't that incredibly fast that were coming out of the showroom. So you had to kind of get out there, and if you wanted to have something that was fun and spirited to go drive, you had to make it that way.
True, true. But think about this, like we're talking about like the 90s and 2000s-ish, right? The cars at that time were so much simpler to work on than a modern car.
Oh yeah,
100%. And that even for like your basic Honda Civic now compared to back then, like suspension on those older ones, like I have a couple in my garage, right? It'll take you, I don't know, half an hour to do the fronts, maybe 35 minutes to do the rears. Yep. Now, though, it's so much more difficult, so much more involved, because there's just so much more to it. So I could see if I was a young guy or girl buying a car and thinking about modifying it, just looking at it like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, I'm going to have to watch a lot of YouTube videos.
And at least you have YouTube videos. Yeah, like, exactly. That's the one good thing, is that at least there's resources out there for these people, because with us, there wasn't. You know, a lot of it was, hey, guess what? Figure it out or find somebody that knows it. Yeah, and that was a whole different ballgame. You know, I don't know if you remember the old Chilton's manuals where you had So you're sitting there, you know, that was the only resource we had, was a book that was written by some guy in Milwaukee that wasn't really set up for anyone working on an import.
Yeah, no, for sure. So for sure. I mean, you got to take the good with the bad. I mean, I think just looking back that far, you know, everyone had a different experience. Like I said, regions make a big difference. You know, how things were maybe in California, where we're going year round with stuff, maybe in your area you couldn't because of the weather, you know, things like that might have held you back.
Maryland was a
But
little weird. As I said, it was a different culture. And then I moved to Virginia after that, and that was a completely different culture. And then
yeah.
moving to New York, I came to New York in 2009, and that was the biggest car culture shift. It went from, you know, something that you saw kind of in the magazines to actually seeing the cars that you did see in magazines, which was kind of cool. Like, you know, going to like the local meets, there was some really, really high quality stuff out there.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I mean, earlier you mentioned Veilside, which is like an interesting one to me because when they were doing a lot of their bigger hits, the ones that really, really hit hard, like globally, that style got knocked off by every aero manufacturer in the US, or you know, US brand, you know, bringing stuff in from overseas. And it was like you'd see like a CRX with a Veilside front bumper, or you'd see like an Eclipse with a Veilside, like all these different cars that didn't actually they didn't make stuff for, they all had that same look, right? And it
They have
took
a
over. I mean, it
style.
was, yeah, it was everywhere. And I remember all the kits were very ill-fitting, huge body gaps, nothing lined up the way it was supposed to. The headlights would be almost floating because of the huge gaps underneath. And that was like, it was accepted. It was like, well, that's just how it is, you know. It was at a weird time when, as long as you had the modifications in your car, you were kind of it, you know. And so I remember going to car shows that were taking place in San Diego, and there would be, you know, dozens of Hondas with that same exact body kit. But then they would change things up by having like a maybe a vent on the side rear on the quarter panel, or a vent on the roof. Then of course the crazy wings and the head and tail light conversions. And it was just accepted. And I remember just thinking, like, man, I would never do that to my car. Like, I hated that style at the time. And looking back, I still hate it. So I always kind of laugh when people comment online and they're like, man, every car today looks the same. Back in the day, it might have been some of the stuff might have been ricey, but at least everyone was doing something different. It's like, no, that's not true. I lived through it and it was not something different. Every car looked identical. They had all these crazy wings and veil side look and you know, super tail lights and all that stuff. It's the same way. It, you know, the grass isn't always greener, I can tell you that.
Oh no, definitely not. I mean, that's the thing is that's why it's a trend. You know, it kind of everyone kind of swims that same little bit, and you have your outliers. Obviously, you were more of the outlier in that group at that time, but you know, even the culture itself, like, you know, Pimp My Ride and all that thing, like everywhere you looked, that's what was kind of even the Volkswagen commercials. Remember the old VW
Yeah, I
commercial?
remember. Yeah.
Everything,
Those are funny. I
it
like those.
saturated every aspect of culture at that time. You couldn't kind of see the non-showy cars. That's just what it was.
Yeah, there's a guy on Instagram. I think his handle is RicerX, and I wrote a story on his car a few years ago, and he basically has an Integra that he's building, sort of like a 90s spec, like very over the top with all the sort of like, if you call them ricey mods, you know. And he's like staying really true to it, and he's doing a really good job of like of actually hitting all the right points. And he's finding stuff that you can't find anymore because it's like, you know, long discontinued, and it looks like it's, you know, a time capsule. And I wouldn't do that personally, but the fact that he's doing it, I just respect it because he's so dedicated to it. And it's worth checking out just because like the level of dedication is like undeniable, you know.
It,
He's going all out to make it.
to me, it's very similar to like when I go to, so I still go to the domestic meets just as much as like, you know, I love going to the old hot rodder meets, the old muscle car guys, and hanging out with them too. And as I walk through there, you get that same time capsule feeling where you're looking at a car and you're like, all right, that's not my style, but I know the time period it came from. I know why this was done this way, and I know everything that, you know, it fits that particular thing. Like some of the gassers, for instance, you know, they're way over the top. You have crazy, you know, metal flake lace paint jobs on them with like you know, I-beam front ends, and you know, flat top end, you know, flat top piston end, sorry, flat top V8s in them. And you know, not my style, but I can respect what it is, and I can look at it and go, this was meant to look like a 50s drag car, and it fits that mold to a T. And it I can look at it and picture it back in that environment. And that's something cool to me that you don't see with every car.
Yeah, I think as I got older, I saw things the way you did, like much more open-minded. When I was younger, like I just hated all this stuff. I hated the taillight conversion. I hated all that stuff, and I was just very bitter about it. But then, you know, as you get older, you just kind of appreciate different things. You know, like I would never do that, but hey, you know, more power to him. You know what I mean? Going to SEMA or spending time looking at the import stuff is like takes up most of my time. But typically when I go there, I will spend some time going through a lot of the hot rod stuff just because I get some good ideas from those guys. They do amazing stuff with engine bays, paint color combinations, things like that. So
I've
I've
stolen
stolen
plenty
plenty
of
of
ideas
ideas
from
from
those
those
guys
guys
over
over
the
the
years
years
and
and
applied
applied
it
it to
to
a build
build
that
that
I've
I've
done
done
just
just
because
because
I
I
like
like
the
the
way
way
it
it
looked
looked
on you
you
know
know
what
what
they
they
did,
did,
stuff
stuff
I
I
never
never
would
would
have
have
thought
thought
of
of
before,
before,
So I
I
think
think
that's
that's
maturing,
maturing,
right?
right?
You
You
kind
kind
of
of
get
get
a
a
little
little
bit
bit
more
more
open-minded
open-minded
about
about
what
what
people
people
are
are
doing,
doing,
with their cars,
You get exposed to more perspective on what you can enjoy and what you can look at something and appreciate it for what it is, and not have to have your bias applied to it, I think. But so other than that, I mean, I feel like that's a really good snapshot into kind of what we were thinking back then, and kind of what, I mean, talking to somebody who was actually living it back then was one thing. As I said, I was a kid just kind of watching from the sidelines for a very long period of time, and it wasn't until I kind of got into it, 2008, 2009 is when I got my my first car to myself and was kind of driving around and started going to meets by myself without having to go tag along with friends and things like that. So that was kind of a whole different thing, you know.
I mean, I think I've said this before talking to Scott, when we did a podcast previously, but I do feel fortunate to have seen all these different phases over the years. It's been a long time, right? It's a number of years, but being able to see these all these weird transitions and kind of cool ones too, I just see it as a blessing. It's been cool to see for sure. But I would like to know like what people out there that are viewing, like what they loved or hated from the 90s, 2000s era. Like
Oh, I'm
just I
sure
just
they're
want to
gonna
know
let
what
us
people, I would like to know
know.
like what was something that they want to see brought back or something they just never ever want to see again? Like for example, Nick in the 3Z with the doors popped up and DMX and his leg out the window,
I don't know if it would
or
be
the leg out the
DMX,
door.
probably Nas, but close enough.
All right, close enough. Cool, man. Good talking to
Well,
you.
good talking to you, and we'll catch up
See you on the
soon.
next one.
Yep.
All right.
Peace.
Good, Max. All right, I'm going to save file. Hold on.